Welcome to the Aquarimax Audio Show with Russ and Kelly. We provide information on all kinds of aquarium-related topics.
This is episode 100, recorded February 13th, 2012.
We finally made it, 100 episodes.
We did. See, all that woo-hooing, that's the giant party we have going on right now.
Yeah. So we'd like to start out by saying thank you to all of our contributors.
Indeed.
We couldn't have done it without you.
Over the past 100 episodes and today.
Yes, indeed. So, and thank you to John. He's not exactly a contributor in the sense he doesn't call in, but he has made this possible.
Yes, John is the one who does the website, and every time somebody has a technical question, we call up John and say, "Help!"
Yes, I do the day-to-day sort of running the website, but if we ever have a problem, he troubleshoots it.
So thank you, John.
Yes. And
speaking of contributors, we have a special message from Ken Jones.
Hello, Russ and Kelly. This is Ken Jones, host of the podcast Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech. I want to congratulate you two on reaching your 100th show. Wow, your commitment to helping others is awesome.
Well, thank you, Ken. We do appreciate that. It's always nice to hear congratulations of that sort for such a momentous occasion.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
And before we go any further, I must apologize. I didn't really mean to get my frog voice out for the 100th episode, but we've been sick, and so if I sound kind of croaky...
Then we'll just chalk it up to your semi-aquaticness.
Oh, that's right.
Here we go. So,
what do we have today?
We've got all sorts of things. We've got Dan in Auburn, Washington.
Or didn't you used to... You were there when you were a kid.
Yeah, I lived in Auburn for a few years
when
I was a wee one.
Tony in New York. And a voice message from Mick in Carnforth. Alex in Australia. And Mike J. And Brian in Idaho.
Yeah, we'll see how many we get through today.
Yeah.
But I think we can probably manage. So let's start out then.
Okay, so first we're going to go to Dan. And he says, first off, I just want to say I discovered the podcast the week of Christmas. The only complaint I have is the show is too short and only once a week. I noticed the filter foam and biomedia say on the package that you need to change them every month or so. I would think that as long as they are not clogged and water is flowing through them, they should be fine. Maybe just rinse them off is the most you would need. Any opinions? From Dan.
Okay, Dan. Well, first, welcome, and we're happy to hear you enjoy the show, and the only thing you would change would be to increase its duration and frequency. Not bad. Okay. We like that. So, I agree with you about filter media. I keep foam media as long as they are working, and, you know, that's can be a long time. I've got some foam media upstairs that I've had for, I don't know, maybe 4 years, still working fine. If the only thing I would say is that if a foam medium, if we want to use the singular, I guess, is the main means of biofiltration in the tank. I rinse it in tank water.
Not in tap water.
Right, because I don't want to damage the bacterial colonies too much. But if they're not the main means of biofiltration, then I just use tap water or even a strong jet from the garden hose.
Do you put a little bit more dechlorinator in when you put it back in?
No, I just squeeze it out first.
Just squeeze it.
And then there's not that much chlorinated water in there, so it's not a big of a deal. And biomedia like ceramic rings, something like that, that's just specifically biomedia and not really a mechanical filtration at all, because, you know, foam is dual purpose there.
Right.
Filters both mechanically and biologically, ideally at least. Biomedia like ceramic rings, I just leave them as long as water flows through them unimpeded. Once they get too clogged up, which sometimes happened, and the flow is compromised, then I will rinse them out, but only in tank water, again, for the same reason. Because what you really want is the bacterial colonies, and the only reason you'd ever rinse them is if they're getting so clogged that water's not flowing through them.
Okay.
As it should. So there you go.
Moving
Thank you,
on.
Dan.
Oh, yes. Moving on to Tony in New York. He says, hello, Russ and Kelly. Thanks again for the top-notch show. My thought experiment continues as I plan the perfect triops tank. My questions for the day. I'm thinking about assassin snails rather than ram's horn snails for the perfect triops tank. After hearing your show about assassin snails and hearing about how they love to devour mussels and the like, I think they may quickly devour dead triops, and I am led to believe that they might even eat the exuvia. Please comment on any thoughts you have about assassins in a triops tank.
Well, Haven't done it, but my suspicion is that it would work fairly well. The only things that I can think of that might be downsides, some chance assassins might eat some of the triop eggs in the sand as they forage, but they might not. And even if they do, they probably wouldn't eat enough
to really be a problem.
They're
pretty teeny tiny eggs. Would they even
They might. In young, young assassin snails, maybe. Okay. I don't know. It's just a possibility. I don't know that they would, but just thinking, they might do that. And then the other thing is that the triops would be more aggressive about food. I'm sure they would, and they're faster.
More aggressive than the assassin snails?
Yes, in terms of getting there first and eating the lion's share of it. But as long as you make sure the snails get enough, you should be okay. And so those are two fairly minor, possible clashes, but I don't think they're bad enough to keep you from trying it.
Now, would your little do-it-yourself bottle assassin feeder, would that keep out triops?
It would keep out bigger ones,
Not the babies.
It wouldn't keep the babies out, but I was actually going to suggest that he might try a snail feeder bottle in there just to make sure they get enough food. And Tony, I think you're right on the money that the dead triops would probably be consumed by the assassin snails, and probably they would go after the shed skins as well.
So it'd be nice to clean it up.
Yeah, I mean, you'd want to keep the dead things out of there anyway, but they would help scavenge a bit. I think it's a good idea. I think go ahead and try it and let us know how it goes. Then he had some additional questions and comments about his triop
setup. Oh, yes, he says, Java moss seems perfect. Do you have any inexpensive ideas for something I could attach it to that would be aquarium safe?
Ah, inexpensive. Well, I'll tell you what. Normally, I would recommend lava rock, which you can get for barbecue grills and so on, and you soak it a few times, and it's usually good to go in an aquarium. But I've read that it can interfere with shedding of triops.
Really?
Yeah, I believe it's mytriops.com.
What is it in the lava rock that messes them up?
I don't know.
What's lava rock made out of? Besides lava.
It's rocks with bubbles in it, that's all. It can be various chemical compositions. But the thing is, I don't know if every type of lava rock would do it, or it was just this particular type, but I don't know that I'd try it because of that. Because it is inexpensive, and it's good for anchoring Java moss, but I don't think I'd try that. So a piece of, resin driftwood's kind of expensive, really. Resin driftwood, not real driftwood. Make it out of resin. It looks good.
What about real
driftwood? And it's inert. Real driftwood's typically not inert.
It's ert.
Yeah, it's ert. But you could probably use, sandblasted grapevine you approve for aquarium use, because it doesn't leach as many tannins in the waters like Malaysian driftwood.
Sandblasted grapevine. They take a grapevine, and they dry it, and they sandblast it?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Wow, some people have a lot of time. I don't know.
It works well in aquariums. But maybe if you just got a non-carbonate piece of safe aquarium rock, one that didn't have carbonate buffers in it.
How do you know if it has carbonate buffers?
Well, if you get something that's like Texas Holy Rock or something, or tufa stone that has those minerals in it, you just have to know your rocks.
What minerals, Kay? Tell us, because I don't know
like
my rocks.
Like calcium carbonate or something like that.
Does it say on there, the nutritional facts for the rocks?
No.
It's got calcium carbonate.
No, you have to look it up. But
okay.
If you just
so go to the store and write down what they've got, and then go Google all those rocks and see what's in them.
Yeah, or go to an aquarium store where they know what they're selling.
Not but then it will cost you more.
Yeah.
Because it's like a wedding, you put the word wedding in front of it, and it instantly costs three times as much.
Well, that's true. It's a rock, and it costs a lot because it's in an aquarium store. But
yeah.
Lace rock.
Lace rock
is good.
There
you go. Lace rock can work. It's usually not that buffering, but you might want to test it.
How do you test it? You
drip some. Some people use muriatic acid. Some people use a little vinegar, but you can drip it on there and see if it fizzes.
If it fizzes, what does that mean?
It's got carbonates, calcium carbonate,
and
things like that,
it.
And you don't want to use it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, that's an idea. There you go. That's not too expensive, I hope, and it's not...
It's got a nice little path running through the middle. Don't put a red herring in your tank. Okay, finally, I'm likely to begin this tank by adding just Java moss and moina. I think it will be interesting watching the moina grow. If I add foam over the filter intake, hopefully most won't be sucked in. If they are small enough to be sucked in, they'll probably be small enough to flow back into the tank too, right? When I have a high population of moina, I will add the triops. I'm not sure if the triops could really eat them all, or if some moina would always survive to reproduce. Time will tell, I suppose.
Well, I like this idea. The foam will help protect the moina from being sucked in. Although if they're small enough to be sucked in through the cells of the foam, the impeller will also get some of them.
Okay.
Kill or damage them. In my experience, though, got to tell you this, and I hope this doesn't ruin anything, but cladocerans like Moina and Daphnia don't do very well if there's a power filter in the tank. A little aeration is okay, maybe even a sponge filter, just air-driven sponge filter, but you put a hang-on-the-back filter in there, and...
They're not too happy, huh?
No, because it draws too many suspended particles from the water.
I hate it when there's suspended particles in my water.
Well, yes, but Moina like it, because that's their food. Their food are suspended particles, and so they don't get enough
food. This is what happens when I'm sick.
Yeah, I guess it does.
Okay, sorry.
No,
it's okay. I'll behave.
It's okay. And if you feed them enough, you might be able to counteract that, but then, you know, water quality issues from feeding them too much. It's kind of a trick there. I have kept tryouts with cladocerans before in a non-filtered tank. Fairy shrimp, too, on several occasions. The tryouts get them.
They just eat them.
They have gotten them every time, but, and this is different from your setup, I've never had a high population of them in the tank before the tryouts were added. Typically, they hatched at the same time, and the fairy shrimp and the Daphnia did fine for a while, and then the tryouts got big enough and started eating them.
So maybe if there's a population already in there... And, well, if he's putting the plants in there, too, would that help they have a little bit of cover?
Well, this is the thing. Cladocerans like Moina and Daphnia don't seem to do all that well with plants
in small aquaria.
Yeah, I mean, in the wild, you find them in ponds that are full of duckweed and stuff, but...
Why is that, do you think?
I don't know. I read about that.
Uh-huh.
I read about it, and it seems to be borne out in my experiments as well.
Interesting.
I don't know if that's always the case, but that's what I've seen so far.
Hmm.
Here's something, though. ArizonaFairyShrimp.com. That's the website where I got our first fairy shrimp.
Spell fairy. Which kind of fairy?
F-A-I-R-Y.
Okay.
And the clam shrimp and things like that. They say that it's possible to keep smaller crustaceans with tryops if they're well-fed.
If the tryops are well-fed.
So they apparently do it.
So if they're not hungry, they're not going to destroy your population.
So this Moina thing sounds like it could be worth a go. Hopefully it works.
Okay. Well, good luck with that.
I like what he says here. You just got to read that.
He signs it, "May your triops charioteer always come in first."
I think he liked your joke from that time.
I'm glad. Okay, we're going to hear from Mick. We have a voice message from Mick.
And here we go.
Hi, Russ and Kelly. This is Mick from Carpet in the UK. Just wanted to say congratulations on the 100th episode of Aquariumax. Amazing achievement. Also wanted to just give a couple of points for this next show. I wanted to say it was a really good idea about the cinder block shelving in fish rooms. I'd consider it with mine, but it's a wooden floor, and it would definitely need to be a super strong, if not a concrete floor, before you put the cinder block shelving up, because that's going to weigh a lot. But it would be a really, really good, strong shelving idea. Also, next point is a new magazine. It's been out in German for quite some time, and it's called Amazonas Magazine. I think it's out 6 times a year. There is now an Americanized, anglicized version. It's really, really good quality magazine. You can view the current issue online at amazonasmagazine.com, I think it is. I'll send you a link to that. This month there's a little bit on freshwater shrimp, but there's also a really, really good 11-page article covering all about neurite snails, which is really, really good. And the guy who's the editor-in-chief, Hans, is a really good guy. He came over and did a talk at our club's fish convention last year. Really entertaining guy, loads of experience, and he's certainly putting together a really good magazine. So just do a Google search for Amazonas Magazine, but I'll send you an email with the direct link into that. And I'm just putting together a YouTube channel for a few little videos of things that's going on in my fish shed. So I'll send you a link to that when I've got the first few videos up and running on that. Anyway, looking forward to the next show. Congratulations again on doing 100 of these things, and looking forward to the next 100 of them. Okay, bye for now.
Well, thanks, Mick. We're grateful for the congratulations and for those points that you brought up.
It's always nice to have a voice message.
Yeah, yeah. It's been a while since we'd had one, so thanks for sending that our way. And thanks, Ken, for your idea about the shelving with the cinder blocks, because, yeah, that really is a good idea, once again. And it looks like it's about time for our break, isn't it?
So we will finish discussing this after the break. Now there are more ways than ever to be a part of Aquarimax. In addition to downloading the podcast on iTunes, you can follow us on Twitter, like our Facebook page, subscribe to our YouTube channel, or call us anytime and leave a phone message at 801-477-0629, or just email us at info@aquarimax.com.
Hello, this is Ken Jones of the Prince of Ponds and Pet Tech Podcasts, and you're listening to one of my favorites, the Aquarimax Show.
And now, back to the Aquarimax Audio Show, a podcast with a Piscenality.
And also, thanks, Mick, for letting us know that the Amazonas magazine is out. It was Brian in Idaho in episode 86 told us about the preview edition, so now the actual first issue is out, so... I remember checking it out when Brian sent it to us, and it looked really cool. So we gave this one a little preview, the link that you sent us in the email, and it looks like it's going to be amazing. So we'll be looking forward to more developments with Amazonas Magazine, and the link is on the page, so everyone check it out.
The resources page.
Well, I've condensed the resources page now onto the main page. So it's just there on the podcast page. You can click on it and go there.
Maybe we can put the link on Facebook.
Yeah, we can put it on Facebook too. Yeah. And Mick has also got the YouTube videos, as he mentioned. We've got his link up too, so you can check out his...
his cute little shrimpies.
Yeah, and his snail. You loved the snail, didn't you?
Oh, I love the apple snails. I really like apple snails. But this was a really cool video of it, just because it was right up kind of in his face. And he had these beautiful, graceful, long feelers. Do you call them antennae on a snail?
You can call them antennae, yes.
He looked kind of, sort of like something off of Star Wars, but in a very pretty, graceful kind of way.
Right. And he was slurping up those pellets like nothing. So that was fun.
Yeah, he was very pretty. Yeah.
And the thriving population of Sakura red cherry shrimp and stuff. So,
and then
check it out.
There's one of his red Ramshorn snails
too. Yeah, check those out. And he's planning on getting some bee shrimp, so he'll be adding those soon. So everyone check it out.
Tell me again what the bee shrimp are like.
Well, bee shrimp are basically like crystal red shrimp, or you know, like that. There are various colors that are known as bee shrimp. Usually it's the black and white striped ones, they call bee shrimp.
They look kind of like a bumblebee.
Only vaguely, if you...
Well, in the vague animal naming sort of way.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
how things that are gray, they call them blue, and things that are orange, they call them red.
Something sort of like that, yeah. So there you go. But they are cool little shrimp. And there you go. So thanks, Mick. Now, we have another contributor from Down Under.
Oh, Alex in Australia. He has a tank cycling question. I just read the first part of it for the first time. That was very nice. I'm here. You read the first part, otherwise it'll sound like I'm being cool on myself.
He says, "Hi guys, love your show. Even though you had a comment requesting you to stop the chat, I for one don't mind it one bit. So if that was you being referred to, Kelly, keep it up, I say. I like the banter on my drive to work."
Well, I'm glad we're keeping you awake on your commute.
Yeah.
He says, "Apologies in advance for my long question, and no need to apologize, it's totally fine. I've bought a Fluval Edge 2, and I'm cycling it with seven..." I'm going to say this wrong. You say it.
I'm probably going to say it wrong, too. Hifeso Brycon Bentosi.
Oh, see, I think you got it. That wouldn't have been coming out of my mouth, I tell you. "I was hoping to do a fishless cycle. However, in Australia, it seems particularly difficult to get any reliable sources of pure ammonia without being certain there are no other cleaning products in the bottles. It's my first tank after about 10 years break from the hobby, so unfortunately, I don't have any mature tank water, gravel, etc. to help cycle this new tank. Thus, I decided to put seven juvenile bentosis, 1 inch each in length, into it, as they are the fish I am looking to put into it, and it appears that I am not overstocking the tank this level. I've also heavily planted it, and the plants are doing marvelously with the LED lighting. I previously had a 6x2x2 foot tank and a 4x2x2, but I'm just getting into the hobby again, and my fiancé said the Edge 2 was as big as I could get for now." How big is the Edge 2?
I don't remember exactly the size of the Edge 2, but it's not very big.
Okay.
I I want to say somewhere between 7 and 12 gallons, but I can't remember offhand, so I could be totally wrong.
So this is the breaking in the fiancé size tank.
Yeah, there you go.
You don't have to tell her I said that. Anyway, I've been diligently doing my daily water tests around 7 p.m. nightly and recording the results.
Yay, water tests.
Woohoo! After about a fortnight, the ammonia had jumped up to 4 parts per million, and I was seeing some good signs of nitrite starting to appear, with pH down at 6.1 to 6.2 consistently, with no noticeable effects on the fish, as the ammo is not typically dangerous at this pH, and I decided to leave it there without a water change to lower the ammonia levels. Two nights later, the ammonia had shot right up to 8 parts per million, and disappointingly, the nitrite had gone back to 0. I assume the ammonia killed off the bacteria, and so the cycling was back at square one, so I did a 50% water change. The bentoses, by the way, were doing fine, even with these high ammonia levels. No red gills, active as usual, and generally looking very healthy. It's been a week now, and strangely, the ammonia has dropped from 4 parts per million to approximately 2 parts per million. Nitrites are still reading 0, and nitrates are also reading 0. I'm being conscious of not doing any gravel cleaning while it is cycling to encourage bacteria growth, and I haven't done a water change since the 50% one a week ago. Can you help me understand why the ammonia has dropped during the cycling process?
Well, this can be a puzzling thing that happens, but I do have an idea for you. One clue that you gave was that your plants are thriving and doing marvelously. Now, if you're getting vigorous plant growth, a lot of plants will use ammonium directly, in fact, preferentially, rather than wait for the bacteria to turn it into nitrate.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So, as you mentioned, at your pH, pretty much all of the ammonia will actually be ammonium, and so fish can tolerate that a lot better. Otherwise, they would have been in serious trouble long before you even approached 4 parts per million. But luckily, you know, at that low pH, you have hardly any ammonia that's not the ammonium form. So this could explain why you're getting lower ammonia but no measurable nitrates or nitrites. The plants are sequestering the ammonium before the bacteria get a chance to do anything
with
it.
Yay, plants!
Now, that is assuming that you are getting vigorous plant growth, but it sounds like you are. But Alex had something to say before I add some additional comments to this. So why don't you tell us what he said?
He says, as an aside, I've been adding regular amounts of bottled bacteria. However, they honestly don't seem to be doing anything at all. I'll keep using it, but as an FYI to other listeners, I'm not seeing any effects, so would be keen to hear other people's successes in this area.
Well, one thing about lower pH, it does make ammonia much less toxic because it goes to ammonium, but it also isn't a very happy place for nitrifying bacteria.
You don't like the pH there?
If the pH, the lower the pH gets, the less efficient their nitrification becomes and the less they're able to do really with it. So according to skepticalaquarius.com, there's a link we'll put on the website.
Did you make that up?
No, I didn't make that up. I wouldn't make that up.
Yes, you would.
No, I make up all kinds of things, but not that.
Skepticalaquarius.com.
Yeah, it's real.
Okay, they win the prize for the coolest website title.
It is a cool title. Anyway, they say that nitrification is at about, in this article, it's about 10% of maximum at 6.0. pH.
So that's not very much.
And Alex's pH is a little bit above that, but still the pH, or the ability of the bacteria to do some decent nitrification is certainly impaired at 6.1. You know, so you might be getting 15-20% nitrification, and so they're not doing as well as they would be. And in my estimation, your best bet is probably to keep those plants just growing as happily as you can. And you should reach a point where ammonium is just kept out of the water column, where you don't have to have a cycle because your plants are happy enough and they're doing the job.
But eventually, though, the bacteria will move in, won't they? I mean,
well, that's the thing. If you have a consistently low pH and you have plants that are taking care of the ammonia, then the bacteria don't have anything to eat. And so they're not going to do anything.
You'll never get them, but it won't matter because the plants are taking
As long as you make sure your plants are happy and growing and you remove enough, you know, through trimming and so on, so that you can keep them producing biomass in terms of plant matter, then you can do it. I mean, planted aquaria can be cycle-free in that way. You never actually have to cycle them because...
So you can kind of sidestep the whole cycling process, but if your plants decide that they're not as happy, you might get a crash in your tank.
So you do have to be very conscious of that, but as long as you're keeping your plants happy, then you don't have to worry about it.
That's very interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a cool thing.
Okay. thank you for your long question, and don't worry that it's too long. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah, I don't think it's too long, and hopefully that helps give you an idea of what may be going on. You know, I'm not there, so I can't tell you for sure that that's what's going on, but that's my suspicion.
Okay, next we're going to hear from Brian in Idaho.
Oh, yes. Brian sent us an email last week about his tank where he had a mycobacterium problem that was appearing, he was thinking, and had how to do some vitamin supplementation to treat that, because one of the best ways to treat mycobacterium is to boost the immune system of the fish through things like vitamin C, vitamin E, and vitamin B complex. So he was wondering about some of those issues, and I responded
ways
last week.
To get vitamins to his fish.
Right, so if you hadn't heard last week, that's what we were talking about, and this is a response to what I said.
Okay, he says, thanks for your email and podcast responses, Russ. I have a couple of thoughts on your responses. The first is that the lipid protein layer I'm growing increasingly frustrated with is probably my biggest culprit. In December, I bought and installed a Fluval 305, which, despite a couple of frustrating design issues, the corrugated hoses slipped through the hanger's elbows, for example, cleans the tank water much more effectively than the undersized HOB.
Hang on back.
Oh. Okay, I'm not even going to go there. That came with the tank. The biggest change I've noticed since December is that in order to keep the outflow nozzle from being too loud, it's in our bedroom, and I hear you, you can't have a loud tank in your bedroom, I have to keep it too low in the water column for good surface mixing, hence the lipid slick. I have an old Fluval surface skimmer that would work if the suction cups were even halfway decent, but of course they're not.
Are there decent suction cups in this world?
I don't know. I would be interested to see if there were. I may end up making a continuous siphon overflow like one of these, and then he inserted a link.
CPRaquatic.com, and we'll put that link on the page.
So you guys can go see what he's talking about. Or an intake where to use with the stock Fluval intake. Either way, it's annoying.
Yeah, that sounds like a good idea, because you got to get that lipid slick. I have a tank over here that sometimes has that problem. It's a 55 in the... I've got a filter on one side of it, but it doesn't always get to the other side, and so sometimes I'll get some little patches over on that other side where there's not enough aeration. So I've added a power head, and that's helping, but still not perfect solution.
Just kind of push the water over more to the filter?
It's up towards the... I have it up near the top most of the time, so it's kind of causes some surface turbulence that can help. Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, I've never tried it, but Foster Smith Aquatics has a hang-on back with an integrated surface skimmer.
Is that Dr. Foster and Smith,
yeah. But I'm interested in that. But I'm also interested in just doing a do-it-yourself siphon overflow or something like that, or one of the ones that you showed, because those look like they could be pretty effective. But there's a lot of good possibilities there. And then Brian also mentioned something about the vitamins.
Says, on the other hand, I talked with the owner of a local fish store and asked him about adding vitamins to fish food. He gave me a funny look and then pointed me to New Life Spectrum Grow fish food and said it's well fortified. I don't know why I hadn't thought to simply check the labels on prepared foods. The label on the sinking pellets I bought lists fish oil as an ingredient, which contains vitamin E. There's also a long list of other vitamins the food is fortified with, including vitamins E, C, and B12. When I got home, I looked at the label on the omega-1 flakes I normally use, and they're almost as well fortified. I guess fish foods have come a long way since I last read the labels. And I'm going to interject here. I just had a funny picture in my head of those breakfast cereal commercials from when you were a kid where it's saying fortified with all these vitamins and part of a complete breakfast. I'm just picturing this fish sitting down to this breakfast table with a big
with
bowl
toast
of
and yogurt and
omega-1 flakes. And yeah. Okay.
Well, that is a good point. In fact, lately I've been using a mixture of both those brands as a staple diet for several of my tanks. I put some New Life Spectrum fish food and then the Omega 1 flakes together, and I've been using that lately. And it didn't occur to me to look at them and see the vitamins in there either. So that's, and you know, it's interesting too, because we've been talking about vitamins quite a bit lately, because Mick was talking about the soak that he uses, and I'm guessing that the soak that he uses sort of complements what vitamins are in some of the foods already, so that they're adding additional ones of maybe to make up for some, not as many, or I don't know, but it's interesting what
you
can find.
Or, you know, some bodies just need more. Same with people.
Yeah,
take
true.
A multivitamin, but also take a lot of individual vitamins.
Yeah.
Maybe if the fish are already feeling crummy, maybe they just need a little boost.
Right, and Omega-1 and New Life Spectrum, and those are top brands of good food, and not every flake you find in a store is going to have all of those things. in it, so that's a very good point.
I mean, I was joking about nutritional labels on the rocks earlier, but do they have a really detailed breakdown on the fish food containers
of
what's in it?
Not in the same way you do in humans, but like right here, I can look at this one. I've got some New Life Spectrum in my hand here, and it has says vitamin D3 and vitamin B12 and thiamine and E, riboflavin, folic acid, niacin, biotin, you know, calcium. It's got a list there of a lot of the nutrients it has in there.
Does it have
a percentage?
They don't have a daily recommended value for fish.
Well, they do have quantities for some of the things they've got in there, like protein, fat, fiber, moisture, vitamin A, vitamin D.
Does it just say, like, percentage of the food that is protein, or?
Well, it's got a guaranteed analysis, but they're only about 8 or 10 different things on there, so it doesn't list every single thing that's in there.
But they are in there.
But they're in there, so.
That's good. The last thing Brian says is, since I'm going to be doing a bit of tank work, I think I'll turn it into a riparian. I'll take pictures of what I come up with.
Well, we'd love to see pictures of your riparian. That would be cool. I love the idea of a riparian. Ever since I heard of riparia, I don't know how long ago it was, but they've been fascinating to me. So we'd love to see that.
One of these days when we have a nice long weekend, we'll do one.
Yeah, there you go. So, we once again would like to thank everyone. Ken Jones, the Prince of Ponds, Dan in Auburn, Tony in New York, Mick in Carnforth, Alex in Australia, Brian in Idaho, and we'd like to say thanks to Mike J. for bringing the server issue to our attention. The server was down.
Oh.
And he sent an email saying, hey, Russ, the server's down.
Thank you for that.
So then we contacted John, and he was able to fix us up.
So thanks to John again, too.
Yeah. So.
We hope you enjoyed our 100th episode. We have had a fabulous time doing this show for you.
And as Mick said, we hope to have 100 more and keep going after that.
Yes.
And I would like to say thanks to Kelly, because she has... I didn't think she knew what she was getting into when we started this.
No.
But she has stuck with it, and I think it's been a great thing. I don't know how it would have gone on without Kelly, so thank you.
Oh, well, thanks for having me. That was the sweet fishy Valentine at the end, right?
Okay, well, may
the fish
be with
you.
Thank you for listening to this edition of the Aquarimax Audio Show. For additional episodes, please visit aquarimax.com. For comments and/or questions that may be featured on an upcoming podcast, leave a message at 801-477-0629 or email us at info@aquarimax.com.